Capital Region. This is the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM, Troy, New York. WOOS 95 or 98.9 FM, Schenectady, broadcasting from the Sanctuary for Independent Media. I'm your host, always is and always will be, H. Bosch Jr.
And I'm Jada. Today we'll hear about a news bucket from Mark Dunley about a rally at the state capitol.
And today we'll hear from, and then we'll hear from the Triple E segment with guests, our very, very own Jaquan Stewart talking about artwork display at Albany City Hall this Wednesday.
After that is Climate Matters with Kevin Bailey of High Peak Solar.
And later on, we'll hear from Justin Baker and Alicia Skelenos Carter to talk about two shows in the region.
Finally, Willie Terry talks to various students and state lawmakers at a press conference sponsored by the New York State Coalition for Student with Disabilities. For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to Hudson Mohawk Magazine on Hudson Mohawk Radio.
Okay, here we go. We
got to learn more about this program and how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. If you have comments, questions, or a Hudson Mohawk Magazine hashtag idea, email us at hmm@mediasanctuary.org. Advocates rallied at the state capitol Monday as single-player healthcare legislation was reintroduced and expanded to include long-term and support care. We hear from the leaders of the caring majority, Assemblymember Dick Gottfried, Senator Rivera and Salazar, New York State Nurses Association, and the Physicians for National Health Program.
On Monday, advocates for single-payer health care rallied at the state capitol to celebrate the reintroduction of the New York Health Act, and they were joined by advocates celebrating the inclusion of long-term care and support services in the single-payer bill. We first hear from the co-chairs of the New York Caring Majority.
We are both members of the New York Caring Majority, a movement of seniors, people with disabilities, family caregivers, domestic and home care workers, nurses, undocumented people, and women from all across New York State.
We are here today to celebrate something truly historic, the reintroduction of the New York Health Act, with the inclusion for long-term care.
Comprehensive and feminist single-payer bill anywhere in the country. This is the bold action that New Yorkers voted for in November. This is courageous leadership that we are looking to our new Democratic majority to show. It's time for New York to lead the nation and set the agenda by passing the New York Health Act.
Long-term care refers to the services and supports needed to meet your personal daily basis. Home care, the work that I do, is not medical care, but other assistance with the basic personal tasks of everyday life. Introduction and amendment is the result of years of organizing by women, seniors, people with disabilities, family caregivers, unions, home care workers, undocumented people, and the uninsured. We call ourselves the caring majority because everyone has a care story. We know that when we join forces and refuse to be pitted against each other, we are an unstoppable force capable of creating a truly caring feminist economy.
So, everybody, are we ready for single-payer care in New York? Yes. Without further ado, we'd like to invite up the two lead sponsors of the New York Health Act, Assemblyman Dick Gottfried and State Senator Gustavo Rivera.
It's enable us to have the clout to bargain down billions of dollars in prescription drug prices, and to use those savings to pay for health care, to end out-of-pocket deductibles and copays and the like, and to put some of that money back in the pockets of New Yorkers so we can create jobs and be more and be stronger consumers. It's no accident that it was the number one issue that pollsters said was on the minds of New Yorkers in the last election. Today we have an opportunity to deliver on the promises that assembly members and senators made all across New York State.
Should not determine your health.
Right.
It's a simple statement, but it's a statement that we all agree on. It's a statement that most should agree on. Unfortunately, there's folks who have been fighting for this piece of legislation, or I should say against this piece of legislation, making all sorts of arguments about how much it would cost, how impossible it is to actually implement. Let's ask ourselves just a few questions, and I'm sure that there's many stories of individuals who are here, individuals who are at home, individuals who are listening. Whether it's your family members, your neighbors, your friends, your coworkers, the situation right now is untenable. And sadly, if you are rich, you indeed have access to the best healthcare system in the world. But that is not the reality for most New Yorkers or for most people. And so we believe, again, that your wealth should not determine your health. And it is why I am supportive of this piece of legislation so far, and it will not be easy going forward. But this battle is necessary. And not only do we need to fight it, but we need to win it.
Jen Bejo of the New York State Nurses Association and Assemblymember Karinas Reyes.
Jennifer Bejo, I am a registered nurse and a proud member of the New York State in the intensive care unit at Albany Medical Center. Today I am here to tell you about the nightmares that my patients face trying to get care in this broken system. I want to provide the best possible care and treatment plan for my patients, but our broken healthcare system creates challenges and insurmountable barriers for my patients to get quality healthcare. Whether it is the high cost of care, inadequate or no insurance coverage, or lack of availability of services, patients are suffering in New York State unnecessarily. You may ask, well, if we have relatively few uninsured patients in New York, do patients really worry about cost of care? Let me tell you this. Yes, they do, and all the time. Worrying about high cost of care, medication or medical equipment, or home care needs creates so much stress on the patient and family that it impacts their overall physical, social, and mental health status, and even their quality of life.
Championing this effort. And for us, it's very personal because we live it every day. We see the inequities every day. And I'm so happy to see so many people here in support of the New York Health Act and in support of the health of our communities. Thank you.
Julia Salazar.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am so proud today to be a co-sponsor of the New York Health Act. Thank you to all of you who have been fighting for so long for caregivers, for people with disabilities, for our elders. We know that healthcare is a human right, but we also know that it is being denied to countless New Yorkers, to countless people, because our healthcare system values profit over people. We don't need another commission or study to tell us what we already know. What we need is single-payer healthcare, universal healthcare across the state of New York. It's time for us to finally make this a reality through the state legislature. It is not right that so many home caregivers have to choose between financially supporting their families, putting food on the table, or caring for their loved ones. It isn't right that so many of our elders, of people at all stages of life living with disabilities, cannot receive the care they need because of their income or employment status, that they are currently unable and are not empowered to live in dignity. It's wrong. We need a system that welcomes everybody in and leaves nobody out.
Yes. and with physicians for the National Health Program.
Currently a practicing internist and HIV specialist and assistant professor at Albany Medical College. I'm proud to say that 2019 is my 40th year on the front lines. I'm here representing Physicians for a National Health Program, which is an organization of over 22,000 physicians in the United States who advocate for publicly financed health care and guaranteed health care for all. I'm also the chair of the Capital District Alliance for Universal Healthcare, which is a local organization which advocates also for single-payer health care. Both of the organizations I represent are strongly support the New York Health Act. Many patients that I've had over the years have one, two, or even sometimes three jobs, none of which supply health insurance. And those that may be, quote, fortunate enough to have health insurance, their employers still can't access the care they need because of co-pays and co-insurance and deductibles, which we all know about. Only a system that covers all New Yorkers, including undocumented immigrants, for all types of physical and mental health services without punitive fees can dismantle the barriers to care that we face. We want particularly to welcome the inclusion in this year's bill of the long-term health care insurance, which of course in the past has impoverished many families and individuals.
We hear from Assemblymember Dick Gottfried responding to a question concerning critics who say that going to a single-payer health care system would in fact increase taxes and costs for consumers by billions of dollars.
They're making up numbers. No thoughtful observer who has studied this topic agrees with those wacky numbers. They just make them up. Secondly, people who know how to analyze health policy issues, both in here in New York and in studies across the country and nationally, all agree that moving to a single-payer system will actually save New Yorkers, save Americans, billions and billions of dollars that are today being going to waste in insurance company bureaucracy and profit and the administrative costs that healthcare, that doctors and hospitals have to waste to fight with insurance companies.
Okay. That was Mark Dunley with advocates at the state capitol Monday as single-payer health care legislation was reintroduced and expanded to include long-term support care.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM Troy and WOOS 98.9 FM Schenectady.
Okay. Me, H. Bosch Jr., interviewed Jaquan Stewart, our very own future artist, filmmaker, and intern right here at WOOC 105.3, regarding his artwork displayed yesterday at Albany City Hall this Wednesday, February 13, and his goals for the future. Hello again, everyone. This is H. Bosch Jr. of the Triple E segment, Education Empowerment Entrepreneurship. Today's guest is Jaquan Stewart, all right, future artist, filmmaker, and my intern. He also has his artwork being displayed at Albany City Hall this coming Wednesday from 5:30 to 7:30. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me on the show.
All right. Well, look, you know you are, you're like MasterCard. We don't leave home without it. Right, Imani? You know, you're like MasterCard. Let me dig right in and we're going to ask some questions because I am so glad you are part of WOOC 105.3 FM, Troy, New York, as well as, you know, doing the intern work. And you're also doing a lot of stuff with MTB, Made to Believe LLC Network. And I appreciate that. I really do. There's so many good things that are in store for your future, and I'm glad that I'm a little small part of it and helping you move things down the road. So where you from? Where were you born and raised?
Oh, I was born and raised in Rensselaer, New York.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Born and raised in Rensselaer, New York. Good. Where do you go to school at?
I go to school at the Rensselaer City School District.
Okay. All right. And how old are you? Now listen to this, folks.
I'm 17 years old.
Wow. Isn't that something? And he's accomplished all of that, all right? Accomplished. So how long have you been doing your artwork?
I have been doing art for almost 3 years.
3 years? Okay. All right. What type of art do you create?
I create abstract art.
Abstract art? All right. Talk a little bit about abstract art. What is that?
Well, I create something out of nothing.
Okay. I do that every week when I get my paycheck.
Yeah.
For I have to become a magician. But anyway, moving right along. Go ahead. Yeah. So you create, I can't stop laughing. You know, I like that joke if you didn't, all right? So do you have any art displays coming up?
Yes, I do. On February 13th, on Wednesday, I have a display at Albany City Hall for Black History Month.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's awesome. That is awesome. And what is one of your goals?
One of my goals in life is to go to Masters in Divinity and to become a pastor.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about that. I like that. You said you want to get a Master's in Divinity and become a minister. And what really drew me to you were you are so grounded to be such a young man. You're focused. You know what you want. And you are already going after it with laser focus. And I appreciated that. That's why I kind of said, well, look, this is a young man that I can work with. That I can help give him tools to put in his belt to continue to build such a, what should I say, a rock solid foundation so you can stand on to move even further and to progress your career, your likes, and your goals. So divinity, that's really, really impressive. Yeah. So what inspires you to make your art pieces? You know, what inspires you to make, because I saw a lot of them, which are just really, really awesome. What inspired, what was your vision, what was your inspiration?
Just the people around me, the things around me, the things I observe in life.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And how did that come about?
People, like, you know how you just get messages from people, like mm-hmm. things around you, you get messages, like life, you get messages in life.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So now who's some of your biggest supporters?
Oh, my mom.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Your mom. Great, great, great. Well, any big supporters or mentors recently that's come into your life?
Yes, his name is H. Bosch Jr.
Inez is Bosch's baby boy. See, folks, they've been hanging around me too much, all right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, imitation is the highest form of flattery. So I appreciate that. So one of your future goals are, along with art, is to be in film and create your own film, right?
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I do want to create my own films, and I do eventually want to help people with their stuff and mm-hmm. help teach kids how to make films and mentor kids and, you know, and help others with their talents and stuff like that.
Okay. Yeah. Now, what do you see yourself at 3 to 5 years from now?
I see myself really successful with a house. See myself successful in the art career. See myself successful in the film career. Mm-hmm. See myself successful in as a minister. See myself, you know.
Okay, so let me ask you this then. What explain to that? Tell me what that means to you then. How has what is it? How has art affected your social life?
I really found who I am as a person. I really found my calling as who I am.
Wow. Yeah. That's awesome. That is awesome. You basically were able through art and your paintings and your drawings, you were able to come into your own and to find yourself. Yeah. Well, I'm going to say this, Jaquan. We have had an awesome time. Myself, you, both our right arm. You know, Miss Imani Taylor, IT, yeah. We've had a great time to be able to do the stuff we have done and to continue to do the stuff that we plan on doing, which is making a difference by being a difference. And I look forward to us really, really, I mean, challenging ourselves to really make the world better. And I'm just so glad you are on the team. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Me too.
You know, and just looking back with some of the stuff we already done, I mean, God is truly blessing us. He is truly enlarging and increasing our territory, and I'm grateful to be a part of your life, and I'm even more grateful that you are a part of my life, and the entire Made to Believe LLC network thanks you.
Thank you.
Okay, as well as the entire WOOC 105.3 FM, Troy, New York station, and family, thanks you from the bottom of their heart. So you're not going to be a stranger. I'm not going to tell you to come back because you haven't left. So I'm just going to say thanks again for this remarkable interview. Folks, listen, this is what people like myself, we're all about. We try to pour our life, our knowledge, our wisdom into young folks like this to give them the tools to succeed. This young man is really walking it the way he talks it, and he's doing some great things. So I encourage you to come out this Wednesday, 5:30 to 7:30, Albany City Hall, and see what a great, great mind can produce. Mr. Jaquan Stewart, we thank you.
Thank you for having me on the show.
All right, all right. So you know what I'm getting ready to say, Imani. All right, until next time. It's about the triple E's, education, empowerment, entrepreneurship. And remember this, don't hear about making a difference. You need to be about making a difference. This is, who is this?
Inez Bosch's baby boy, H. Bosch Jr.
There you go. Till next time, folks. All right, that was our very own Jaquan Stewart. And once again, thanks so much, Jaquan, for sharing your remarkable story. And nothing but good things are to happen, and the best is yet to come to you, young man. So we appreciate your service, your commitment, and your continued support in what we do here at the station.
For those just tuning in, I'm Jada.
And I'm your host, H. Bosch Jr. You're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on Hudson Mohawk Radio.
To learn more about the Hudson Mohawk Magazine program, to listen online, and to learn how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, check us out online at mediasanctuary.org. If you have questions, comments, suggestions, or sour bone to pick, email us at hmm@mediasanctuary.org. Also, be sure to tune in at 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights for Jazz Sanctuary, a wonderful celebration of all that is creative, dedicated to supporting jazz in the Hudson Mohawk region.
Welcome to Climate Matters. We're here with Kevin Bailey of High Peak Solar, and in this segment we're going to be talking about community solar. So welcome back, Kevin.
Thank you.
Great to have you. So in terms of community solar, it's great to have someone like Kevin because he's not just talking about it from a conceptual level, but has the direct experience of developing a local community solar project. So Kevin, maybe you could start with big picture. What the heck is community solar, and why is it? Why would people choose that? In the last segment, you spoke of customers choosing either off-grid and their motivations for that, or grid-tied and the motivations for that. But what happens if they're not following either of those paths? Why should people be interested in community solar?
Community solar is for everyone.
Mm.
Whether you rent, whether you lease an office space, as long as you're responsible for an electric bill, you can participate in a community solar project, otherwise known as a solar farm, you might hear. And what that allows you to do is have part of that project. So say there's 1,000 panels and you need 12 panels. You can have a percentage of that project, and the utility will actually credit your electric bill with your responsible portion of that generation from that solar farm. And so I recognized that this was a good opportunity to serve people who have contacted me over the years who just didn't have good solar sites but really wanted to do something in support of sustainability with their power consumption. And so now that community solar is allowed, which I believe was in 2015 or 16 was when the Public Service Commission allowed it, now having that option is very important for people who want to support renewable energy.
So in both cases, whether it's grid tied on your own home or you have a utility bill and you decide you want to pursue community solar, you're getting the kilowatt hour benefit is shown on your bill. Is it a kilowatt hour benefit or a dollar benefit, or how does that work?
So sort of the policy change shortly after community solar was allowed. The compensation has been decreased since it started with a move away from net metering towards this thing called the value stack. Mm-hmm. So it's a total different set of rules that swept a lot of projects mid development cycle. So there's a radical change shortly after this was set off, and people were starting to do these types of projects. So the project that I started to develop.
And this is the Hope Solar Farm?
This is the Hope Solar Farm, yeah. So I was contacted by a church in Brunswick, New York to help them do this on their land, to give them a revenue stream and to sort of include the community in the efforts to build this thing. And it's still ongoing. We have a website for it called hopesolarfarm.com. We have a lot of facts there where you can go and that talks about how it works, and there's links to other pages there where you can sort of take a look into the world of what community solar is.
Yep. So if you're a customer, is the idea you could participate or buy into the solar farm to the degree that you can offset 100% of your bill, or is there a limit of 50% of your utility consumption? Or
It's optional. It's just like as if we went to someone's home and wanted to size a system for their home. With the solar farm, however, you don't necessarily have to purchase them and outlay cash up front. You can simply buy the electricity from the project at an ongoing rate, similar to purchasing it from the utility. So that there's a large group of people that would prefer that approach, and that is more inclusive towards the general public.
Gotcha. So for you mentioned renters, and then there are also people who might have some large trees or don't have enough yard for ground-mounted solar, or they live in an urban environment where there's a building to their south shading them.
There's so many scenarios where people just can't do solar, and this community solar sort of broke down all those barriers and allowed for a lot more customers. And it's sort of they're typically large projects, so there's large injections into the grid. That production is during the daytime, and there's seasonal variations of production. So customers within a solar farm will be receiving more electricity during the summertime and less in the wintertime as far as their bill is impacted. So getting people to understand how it's working on that front is...
So on an annual basis, a customer could choose to offset 100% of their bill, but it may vary month to month because of the technical output of the panels themselves.
Yeah, you still need the power line to your house, so you'd still have to pay your connection fee to the utility. And if your power goes down at the house, you're not physically connected to the solar farm directly. It's part of the utility grid, but you're getting credits through the utilities billing system.
Gotcha. So we're here on Climate Matters with Kevin Bailey of High Peak Solar, and we're going through kind of an overview of community solar, a new option for people interested in renewable power who may have limitations on their facility to sign up. Their limitations may be physical, or they may be renters, or any other possibility. So Kevin describes it as solar for everyone. So Kevin, you mentioned the website for Hope Solar. I wonder if you could repeat that website and also tell us where people could go to learn more generally about community solar.
So that website is hopesolarfarm.com. There's a facts section on that page, which has 15 to 20 questions commonly asked on how the program works. And a lot of those questions would deal with projects from other companies and tailored to how it works in New York State currently.
Yep.
I know of several other companies that are offering community solar projects. Locally, Monolith Solar and Hudson Solar each have projects in different utility territories, so you can check out what's out there and sort of compare what option may be best for you.
Right, and if people wanted to pursue, they really wanted to get into the nitty-gritty, they could go to the Public Service Commission, New York DPS, NYDPS, or to NYSERDA, the New York Sun, to find out some more there. How's this been growing? What's the schedule for building Hope Solar Farm, and where are you in the development process?
So there's a large interest in it. I am still navigating the permitting process. This is going on my third year. I think I knocked on the door for a building permit in summer of 16, And so I'm currently waiting to get the decommissioning bond approved from the town board, getting my stormwater management plan signed off, which has been promised a few times, but still not in hand. The stormwater issue was sort of, varying of opinion on whether or not it's not a solar field is not a parking lot, so yep. It's not like there's a huge congregation of water leaking. I've heard that the DEC has deemed solar farms or community solar non-penetrable or what's the term I'm looking for, impervious,
right?
Impervious surfaces, and so whether or not they actually create storm runoff water was sort of up for debate, and depending on who
right,
you talk
so
with.
So depending on the local permitting authorities and other such details. So
we're getting close.
Yep. But. So what roughly what are you looking at? We have less than a minute left, and just trying to get a handle on, for folks, you've got a number of folks interested. The two questions remaining, can people still sign
yes.
up? And what's the timeline on when they would get the kilowatt hour benefits?
We're about 90% full.
Oh.
So a lot of customers, close to 200 people have signed up so far. My hope is to have the permit in February and start construction this springtime with power flowing by summer.
Look out.
19. So
that is good news. I didn't realize we're really looking at this year, and certainly a lengthy process given
yeah.
that you were digging in 2016. So
it's well worth the time and effort though. So.
Great to hear. Kevin Bailey, High Peak Solar, thank you very much for joining us on Climate Matters.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. That was Peter Savo with this week's segment of Climate Matters.
Host Justin Baker and Alisa Cyclianos Carter discussed the two shows in the region, A Decolonial Atlas, Strategies to Contemporary Art of the Americas in the Manville Gallery at Union College. Also discussed in Place of Now at the Opaca Gallery at Sage College of Albany. Alisa provides her own insight into Place of Now as a participating artist in the show. To see more of Alisa's work, please check out her website, www.aliciaskilianocarter.com.
Hi, this is Colorworks Radio. This is Justin Baker, and this week with me I have Alisa Cyclianos Carter, and she's going to be my guest for this evening. And this is Colorworks Radio. We're talking to local artists and expanding the local arts vernacular. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
I am good. Thank you for coming, and it's wonderful to have you here. A couple shows that I want to start off talking about that look interesting and worth seeing. One of them you're in. The first one is at the Mandeville Gallery, which, if you don't know, is at Union College, which is all the way in Schenectady, New York. So you have to make a trip there. But it's going to be worth it, trust me. The show is A Decolonial Atlas, and it is Strategies in Contemporary Art of the Americas. One thing I found that this show was interesting, was taken on, was the idea of colonialization in contemporary art, and those people that possibly colonialized kind of taking back their culture and representing it in a different way. From what I understand, the show is kind of heavy on video art, but there is also some painting, photography, and sculpture, which I thought sounded pretty amazing. And if you go to the website, the images, the videos they have really look quite amazing. And that would be through Union College. The second one that I want to talk about is In Place of Now, which is at the Opaca Gallery, which is in Albany, New York. And that's 140 New Scotland Avenue. And that actually opens on February 12th, and it just so happens that Alisa is in this show. Pretty awesome, huh?
Yeah, I'm very excited about it.
And we are excited to talk about it. So, couple things about the show. Some of the artists that are represented in the show is Willie Cole, Renee Cox, Shawnee Crow, Krista Franklin, Wayne Hodge, Darian Longmire, Stacy Robinson, and you. So looking at some of the artists through the show, I had known about Wayne Hodge for a while. I think I said it wrong again, didn't I? Hodge, sorry. And I love his work. And I thought the show sounded pretty amazing to me because it looks at this idea of otherness, reinventing the past, reclaiming the future. And it also has these super, I don't know, just the ideas in it seem pretty interesting to me. And it seemed like a pretty interesting show to look at this point in time. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, or I know your work, from what I've read and seen, seems super interesting.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And it ties in to some of those ideas, but maybe you wanted to talk about any conversations you had with the curator going in, or the work you're showing, mm-hmm. or maybe even some of the work that you saw in the show.
I know some of the artists, like visually, their work from the show, and when I spoke with the curator, both Judy and Ron, they explained the theme to me, and it's essentially like an Afrofuturist show. So just thinking about all of the artists are Black, and thinking their work, well, their work says a lot of things, but the theme of the show is thinking about like a new narrative and kind of where we sit within politically what's happening and how our work is expressing different ideas of like Blacks in the future, in the past, and in the current time. So I think that in general, like Afrofuturism is really interesting to me. I love the idea of I love the idea of imagining myself or Black people in both like a utopian place where it's like everything's really amazing and really peaceful, and also maybe in something that's a little bit more uncomfortable, but is ours and where we are able to be free. And I think does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. I just love those ideas so much, and in thinking about like your work, mm-hmm. it almost seemed like the show was built for you. Now I know that's not true.
Yeah,
but it has that feeling. And looking at Wayne Hodge's work, mm-hmm. I feel the same way from everything I've read about mm-hmm. him in the past. You know, he's like a collage person, mm-hmm. so that's my way into him.
Yeah,
but you're kind of a collage person too, to some extent,
right? Yeah.
I don't know where I'm going with that, but I just found like the show seems exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just thinking about everything going on in the country
mm-hmm.
politically. And so maybe not important, but like the show feels very present and maybe addressing some of those ideas, and not even like the present, but maybe if you could go back, 10 years or whatever, mm-hmm. Do you have any thoughts or feelings about that?
I think it is. I mean, I think it's absolutely relevant to now and, like a decade ago, like you said. I think it's like, it's important. I mean, I feel really empowered and very excited to be in a show with like these very strong, artists and who are also Black, and it's like, asserting, like the work is very assertive, and it's very empowering. And I haven't seen everything, but I did get to see a little bit of it when I dropped off my work. And I feel like it's like, I don't know, it's just, it's like unmovable. We're just like, it's very, as I said, assertive, and it feels it is very exciting. And I think as far as the political climate, and I guess I'll talk about my work a little bit in that way, and that's like the, there's so many different things that you can talk about as far as like the way that people of color, Black people, Black Americans are experiencing the political climate. And I think for me, my work is like talking about the body and like in aesthetic, like aesthetically and also politically, and it's talking about, like, there's different, it sort of came about, if it's okay if I can start talking about my work.
Oh,
a little
yeah,
bit.
Sure.
I mean, but in this context, like, it came about thinking about, there's different stories that I read around the country where school children and people who, in whatever, workers and offices were being asked to go home or kicked out of school because of their hairstyles. So, like, if they were wearing an afro, their hair natural, wearing dreadlocks or braids or whatever, it could be extension, something that was, like, distracting. And it just really felt, it felt like archaic. It's just like, it's 2016 or 2017, 2018, and this is still happening. And so that's, like, one aspect. But obviously there's other things, just the, like, literal violence that's happening to black bodies. And so the combination of those things that were going on, I felt like, that's sort of where my work was born out of. But I think, yeah, I don't know. That's where I'm going with that. But that's just, like, relevant to the time, I guess. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. So it segues into the show as being, like, a snapshot of not yes. quite now, but maybe a reaction to now and the past.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yes. No, it's powerful. I find it super exciting. And, you know, also just kind of going back to the show mm-hmm. at Union, I thought that was also, it was interesting that in the region we could have this discourse
yeah.
about these two kind of political ideas and how they manifest themselves in works of art,
right.
which is always powerful in terms of, like, furthering the discussion
right.
or just even bringing awareness to it at such, like, what seems like such a kind of a, I don't want to say backwards time, mm-hmm. but it seems like,
I think that
what's going on.
yeah,
you know, I thought like we were kind of not maybe past these things, mm-hmm. but we had made progress.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like there's this kind of backwards trajectory that hopefully corrects itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that aspect. And also, you know, just in terms of the region, it showcases like some really great opportunities to see work, you know, where I always feel, you know, I think I probably talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but I always feel like this region has a lot to offer
mm-hmm.
in terms of contemporary art, that in this small region, you know, we're kind of rich with some kind of great places to see art.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
In the next spot, we'll be talking to Elisa about her work and a little bit more and how she came about some of the ideas she's working with. Again, this is Colorworks Radio, and thank you.
Okay, that was Justin Baker speaking with Elisa Psychianos Carter. All right, WOOC's Hudson Mohawk Magazine Network roaming labor correspondent Mr. Willie Terry attended a press conference sponsored by the New York State Coalition for Students with Disabilities on Monday, February 11th at the New York State Capitol Building. They were rallying for funds to support services for students with disabilities in New York State colleges. The requested state funding entitled Enhanced Supports for Students with Disabilities. In this segment, you'll hear from various students and state lawmakers in support of this request.
My name is Harvey Epstein. I'm a state assembly member for the 74th Assembly District. I want to welcome you to the first New York State Students with Disability Advocacy Day. Today is a day about you. Today is to talk to people in the Assembly and the Senate about how important services for students with disabilities are, and that the state needs to step up its responsibility to SUNY, CUNY, and private school to ensure they have access to services so they can be high-achieving students throughout the state of New York. We have a lot of people here, which is really amazing. I want to thank you from all parts of the region. Who's here from New York City? Who's here from Western New York? Anybody from the Hudson Valley? Our friends from Long Island? Utica, folks from Utica. Syracuse. Got some friends all the way from Buffalo here. All right, thank you all. So this is about you. This is about how we, as a community, fight together to ensure students with disabilities have access, the ability to come to Albany, hear from your elected officials, push us to make a difference so people with disabilities get higher paying jobs, opportunity for job, and it starts at having a higher education, community students in the private schools. And we have a lot of elected officials here with us today, but first I want to introduce the chair on the Assembly Task Force on People with Disabilities, Phil Steck.
Thank you very much, Harvey, and I want to thank you all for letting me chat with you a little bit. I represent Albany and Schenectady counties. We met with representatives of CUNY and SUNY regarding support for additional funding for people with disabilities. We are well aware that state funding in this area has been completely stagnant since 1993. And during the same time period, that CUNY's population of students with disabilities has increased by more than 30% from 7,000 to more than 10,000 students. So it is very, very clear, and I face this on all, as chair of the task force, I face this on all issues related to people with disabilities, that the funding levels at this point in time are woefully inadequate. And we have difficult choices to make during the budget season. But I can assure you that from the standpoint of the task force, we will be there advocating for a minimum increase of $15 million for this this project. And, you know, that money is available. And when you, so I, you know, a lot, the if you've ever seen the budget bills, which you haven't, when they stack up for a vote, it's about yay high. So people don't know about every part of the budget. And it's up to you when you go around to educate people that there is money that could be used to fund these needs. So again, thank you for letting me talk with you. I wish you all the best because the work that you're doing today will support the task force in what we're trying to accomplish, and we will be there together.
We have many champions, both in the Senate and the Assembly, for this day. But I want to turn over to our co-sponsor, Andrew Gernardes, from the state senator, who is helping co-sponsor this day. Thank you, Andrew.
This is overwhelming. I just want to say, you know, there's been a lot of people going to talk about how important today is. I just want to say thank you. Thank you for coming here and for being, you know, being one collective voice as to how important it is that we are focusing on these issues, talking about these issues, understanding these issues, and making sure that every student in our state is able to have quality access to a world-class education, regardless of who they are, what disability they might have, what impairment they might have, no matter what. Everyone here, everyone in our state should have an equal opportunity for academic excellence. And that's why we're here, that's why you're here, and you are giving voice, you are giving agency to the importance of that. So really, from my perspective, as someone, as a state senator, I need to hear from you. I want to hear from you. I want to hear from you and people that aren't here and people back home and people in my district and people in other districts, people in CUNY campuses where I graduated from, people in SUNY campus, people in every single school. Joe, we don't hear from you. I'm sorry?
Tell Joe Griffo.
We don't hear from you. And so you're going to tell me that message and I can then go and share that message on the floor of the Senate. That's why it's so important that you're here, for that very exact reason that you just spoke up about. So Really, thank you, thank you, thank you. Great job being here. Yeah. Can't wait to see you guys inside the chamber. And this is only the beginning. We have a lot more work to do. You all have a lot more work to do, but today it begins. So thank you for being here.
Another huge champion who's the chair of the Higher Ed Committee in the State Assembly, I want to bring up Deborah Glick.
What a turnout.
Yeah.
What a I applaud you for being here and for fighting consistently with one united voice that students with disabilities deserve the same access to education as everyone else. And we believe that whether you go to CUNY or SUNY, or any private college in the state of New York, you, like every one of your classmates, wants to be successful.
Yes.
And it is our obligation to see that the accommodations that are guaranteed by law are afforded to each and every one of you. The regents, the colleges have united to come forward with a simple request that $15 million be in the state budget to provide support for the accommodations that are necessary for students with disabilities. Is that reasonable?
Yeah.
Are we going to get it done?
Yeah.
Are we united?
Yeah.
Then we cannot be defeated. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. So I'm going to turn it over to Leonard Blades, who knows this issue more well than most other students. Leonard.
Thank you, Assemblymember Epstein. Well, obviously, my name is Leonard Blades, and I proudly serve as the chairman for the CUNY Coalition for Students with Disabilities, CCA, the representative organization for more than 11,000 students with disabilities throughout the City University of New York. I also proudly serve as the Vice Chair of Disability Affairs for the University Student Senate, USS. CCSD and USS both support the State Education Department for enhanced funding for services for students with disabilities throughout colleges, throughout universities, throughout higher education. CUNY has not received state funding for basic services for more than 25 years. However, the number of students with disabilities at CUNY has grown by more than 30%. And it's reasons like that, which is why we are so proud to be working with our champions both in the State Assembly and the Senate. We are proud to be working with them because the goal in mind is to achieve greater access and greater opportunities for our students throughout higher education.
Thank you. Students united will never be defeated.
We're lucky to have someone, Regent Sia, who's going to talk to us about where CUNY and SUNY and the state is at on this really important issue. Well, please come on up. Thank you very much.
Hi, everybody. It's great to be here and to see all of this enthusiasm. I work with Chris Rosa on the Advisory Council for Postsecondary Students with Disabilities, and Tamara Mariotti is the co-chair over there. And Nick, you should also know that you have the support of the Board of Regents.
You heard that, right?
You heard that.
You have the support of the Board of Regents.
Okay. While much has changed for the better since 1990 Americans with Disabilities Act and the landmark Supreme Court Olmstead ruling of 1999, it is clear that there is so much more to do to assure equity and access for all people with disabilities.
Yes.
Yes. Employment opportunities and career options remain severely limited.
Yes.
High school graduation rates too low.
Yep.
Post-secondary acceptance, persistence, and completion unacceptable.
Yes.
The good news is that significantly higher numbers of students with disabilities are going to college.
Yes.
As with all, a better education means increased independence and earning potential. Accordingly, we need to make sure that we are doing everything possible to assure full access and support. So today, we call on the governor and the legislature to bring greater focus and attention to this issue by investing $15 million in assuring reasonable accommodations for all students with disabilities attending New York's greater higher education institutions.
That concludes our show. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm your host, H. Bosch Jr.
And I'm Jada. Our engineer tonight is Susan. Remember to tune back in tomorrow and every weekday at 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. to get your daily dose of local news. You can also get that dose on demand through our Hudson Mohawk Magazine podcast and Facebook page. If you have comments, suggestions, or a tender confession, email us at hmm@mediasanctuary.org. Also, be sure to tune in 7 to 10 weeknights for Jazz Sanctuary as up next, a wonderful celebration of all that is creative dedicated to supporting jazz in the Hudson Mohawk region.
With our very own Susan B. As a reminder, Hudson Mohawk Magazine or Hudson Mohawk Radio Network is produced by local volunteers. If you're interested in volunteering with our radio effort, shoot us an email at info@mediasanctuary.org or just stop by one of our weekly meetings on Monday nights at 7:07 p.m. held right here at the Sanctuary for Independent Media. Until next time, folks, thanks for tuning in.